The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Frank James Bailey, voice actor and writer. As a voice actor, you might have heard my voice on Channel Frederator videos. As a writer, I've written 3 books about a female superhero named Turkana. And today I want you to join me on the PVD cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your podcast purveyor and film buff extraordinaire, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 217. That's right, we're going to be talking about movies on this episode. And when I say we, I mean, of course, yours truly, and my guest, Mr. Paul Markoff. Paul is a local film critic, and he is one half of the Film Bound podcast, which you can find over at filmboundpod.com or wherever you get podcasts from. And twice a year, Paul joins me to discuss the crop of movies that came out about 6 months prior to the recording of our episode. So for this edition, we're going to be talking about movies that came out between July and December of 2019. Now, I will admit, and hopefully it doesn't happen, but spoilers might occur. So what I am going to urge you to do is to check out my personal Twitter page, at PVDMVP, or go over to the Facebook page of the PVD cast, because I will post a list of the films that both I and Paul are going to talk about. Hopefully that'll alleviate some of the spoilers that might possibly happen, and you know, maybe you need to just skip ahead when we start talking about that movie, but whatever. I try to eliminate as many spoilers as possible, but it's kind of impossible sometimes, you know? So with that being said, before we roll into that conversation between myself and Paul Markoff, need to let you know that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era. We're talking the golden era, the silver era, the bronze, and even the modern era. But they also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various other collectibles. So stop on over to the store and say hi to the fine folks over there at World's Greatest Comics. Or check them out online at wgcomics.com. And guess what? They're even on Facebook. Just search for WG Comics. And no matter how you interact with them, whether in person or via the internet, please let them know that you heard about the store from yours truly right here on the PVD cast. And with that little bit of business out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to talk movies with my guest, Mr. Paul Markoff. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're ready to hear about some fantastic movies, we're ready to tell you about some fantastic movies. I'm joined by Paul Markoff. Paul, how are you?
Very good. Very good. Thanks for the invite back.
Hey, man, this is like the 9th time you've been on this podcast.
Wow. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess.
Yeah, most definitely. But anyways, let me just set the ground rules for some of the folks that are listening. We're going to talk about movies that basically came out in July through December. Please keep an eye on the PVDcast social media, the Facebook page, and my own personal Twitter. I'm going to list those movies so that just in case you haven't seen one, we don't ruin it for you. All right, so I don't want to get any angry tweets or angry emails from people that we ruined Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker for you. All right, so just keep an eye out to that. But, Paul, I'm kind of selling you short, man. You are the co-host of the Film Bound Pod, so you want to tell the folks at home a little bit about that fantastic project?
Yeah, my co-host, Mark Pfeiffer, and I, Mark does most of the work on Film Bound. He does all the editing. We used to host a film review program on WOCC-TV, which was the Westerville Audubon Community Channel, for close, around 20 years or so. And then we broke off from that and we started doing a podcast called Filmbound. And it's at filmboundpod.com. We typically have a new podcast up every Wednesday.
Cool. And it's also available on iTunes and all those other streaming
services.
Yeah,
or wherever you can. Yeah.
Wherever you can find them. That's the way to go, man. That's the way to go. All right. So let's go ahead and just keep Star Wars for last. How about that? Because I think if any movie that could be spoiled, I think that's going to be the one. So we'll keep that for last for the listeners so that they, when they hear that we're going to talk about Star Wars, can fast forward or whatever.
Sounds good.
Okay. So here's what we'll do. We'll just kind of bounce back and forth, giving our thoughts, our opinions on what we've seen, what maybe we liked or didn't like. So would you like to start off?
Sure.
Okay. Go right.
Sure.
Ahead.
So since we're picking up from July to the end of the year, that's when all the heavyweight Oscar contenders come out.
Okay.
And actually they just had the Oscar nominations come out, this past Monday morning.
That's
we're
correct.
Recording this on a Wednesday.
Sure.
I'll bring up this one cause it's one of my favorites of the year. It also got completely snubbed by the Oscars. And I think I understand to a certain extent why the people that made the film and the person that, although he's part of Hollywood, he's to a certain extent kind of an outsider, especially when it comes to the awards bait, is a movie called Uncut Gems, which starred Adam Sandler.
Ooh. Okay, we're gonna have a little bit of a disagreement on this one.
All right.
Go ahead.
You go right ahead.
What did you enjoy about Uncut Gems?
One, it's completely thrilling. I mean, it cooks. The movie's constantly in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about a New York City jewel dealer,
mm-hmm.
Who is also a gambling addict, and is also, his marriage is on the rocks. He's got two kids. He's got a girlfriend. He's got a side apartment. This guy's life is pretty much utter chaos, and we're essentially going through his chaos for what, about the span of, I'm going to say,
hours.
40.
Isn't, oh, the chaos itself is about, yeah but the whole movie is like 2 hours.
Yeah.
The whole movie is about 2 hours.
Right.
But sorry. Okay, it's about 48 hours chunk of time in 2012, actually.
Yes.
Okay. I did not like this movie. I felt like, to me, the chaos was just annoying after a while. Like, it seems that there, as you mentioned, it's constantly in motion. But just, I don't know, there was something about it that really just annoyed me that I'm like, could we have a couple scenes where just things are slowed down a little bit? Lots of yelling.
Well, he's in a lot of trouble. You didn't find any interest or excitement in trying to see how he's trying to essentially juggle all these balls, whether it's the jewel coming in.
My other problem with
the ring that he has,
yeah.
Kevin Garnett, I thought they did a wonderful job incorporating the real life scenario of the NBA playoffs at the time into the storyline.
Look, I have a problem with characters who are massive jerks at the beginning of a movie, and then they're the same massive jerk by the end of the movie. There's no, not even like if they're a massive jerk at the beginning of the movie and then they're maybe a little bit less of a jerk at the end, I can deal with that. But this, I felt like Howard, Adam Sandler's character, was just the same jerk from the beginning to the end. I just didn't dig it. I know I'm in the minority. I know that from all of the reviews I've read, everybody loves it. I also will say I hate The Weeknd and he was in it. So that also is another black mark towards it, so to speak. I hate that R&B singer. I'm so glad that his 15 minutes of fame is up and hopefully it's not rekindled because he's in this movie, but nonetheless.
So the Safdie brothers, the directing duo, Benny and Josh, they've done some other kind of independent stuff in the past. This is the first film I think I've seen that they've directed. They're basically showing a gambling addict. And although he has some other things going on, he's not only gambling on sports, but he's essentially gambling on every aspect of life.
Yeah. And from what I understand, those two gentlemen, the brothers, kind of grew up because their father was in the jewelry business in the jewelry district in New York City. So they kind of modeled Howard after a lot of people that they knew, that this is not something that is kind of a standalone situation, that it seems there's a lot of people in that industry. And maybe that's because you're in that industry because you're taking a gamble. Like the stock market, you know?
Right. Yeah. I suppose there's a certain Yeah, certain gambling aspect
trait. Right, for that. But I'm not a fan. You go ahead and explain why what more you liked about it.
I liked how the film's in perpetual motion. I think Sandler gives. I mean, to me, I don't think it's close. I think it's the best performance of the year, and I think the only reason why he probably didn't get nominated is two things. One, his reputation for being in comedies, not so good.
Right.
And the fact that I don't know that he's really hanging around the Hollywood types. I mean, he hangs around with his SNL alums, and he seems like kind of down-to-earth, New York City, or if he's from Jersey, Jersey boy type of guy. I saw something on 60 Minutes with him that I found to be pretty endearing, where he was hanging out at his mom's house. And he's just kind of this normal, average,
An average Joe.
Average Joe. And I think that plays against him when it comes to award season. But I thought his performance was terrific. I thought there were several other performances in the film that were good. Even Kevin Garnett, who's playing himself, I think does a nice job.
If he screwed that up, there's a problem. Let's just be honest.
Well, but there are other people that have played themselves in movies. For instance, LeBron James was in a Trainwreck.
Yeah.
And I don't think he didn't seem as at ease.
Yeah.
Some of them, don't seem as comfortable in their own skin when you put a camera in front of them and they're making a big production. I thought Kevin Garnett was good.
Okay. Well, you liked it. I did not. I actually gave it an F. I was totally done with it.
I'm A-minus range. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's switch to one that I'm going to mention from July. As a matter of fact, I think the last time that you were on, I'd mentioned that I was looking forward to seeing it. But I hadn't had the chance to, and that is Quentin Tarantino's ninth film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I gave it a B. I thought it was good. Not his best work. I felt my major problem with the movie was it's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and it doesn't need to be 2 hours and 40 minutes. Did you happen to catch this?
Yes. Yeah. I liked it quite a bit. I'm probably B plus A minus. Right. Okay. I mean, it's definitely in my top 10. Probably a little bit below Uncut Gems.
Okay.
I was completely immersed in the experience. So to a certain extent, like when you say it doesn't need to be 2 hours and 45 minutes, you may be right. But part of the enjoyment of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is just being absorbed in the culture and what these guys are doing.
Sure, I'll give you that.
Lavishing whatever late 1960s Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say that's kind of the last, golden age for what they were living in the movie. And this is kind of Tarantino's nostalgic look at the time and kind of kiss goodbye to that era.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Watching Pitt drive around in his car or those guys talking, there's one scene in it that it doesn't really add up to anything more than the scene itself. Is it just being an enjoyable scene? But there's a scene where Brad Pitt's character fights Bruce Lee.
Right.
And I found it completely entertaining and hilarious.
I did too.
But I mean, as far as, the essence of the movie and building to something greater at the end, it doesn't. It's kind of a standalone piece that works well. And so does it need to be 2:45? Not necessarily, but I'm glad it was because I enjoyed spending time with the characters and, dwelling back into that era of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, not to me, not his best work, but not his worst either. So middle of the ground. I agree with you. I thought the story, my favorite scene in the movie is when Leonardo DiCaprio is sitting there in the cowboy getup talking to the 10-year-old girl. And like that whole interaction I thought was a fantastic scene and really well done. I just felt like there were some scenes that could have been trimmed down quite a bit. Like you mentioned, Brad Pitt driving around in Hollywood. We don't need like 5 minutes of that. Trim that down a little bit. But overall, I enjoyed it. It was a great film. So I still stick with my B. I'm going to move on to another one that I think we talked about the last time you were on and I had yet to see it. And that was the Jesse Eisenberg film, The Art of Self-Defense. So Jesse Eisenberg plays a very meek and mild individual who is mugged and then decides to learn to defend himself. He enrolls in a karate dojo, and that karate dojo has a little bit of a dark side to it that many people don't see. Thought it looked really, really good. I ended up giving it a C because unfortunately all of the funny and, it's a very dark humor, but all of the funny parts are shown to you in the trailer, which was a little bit disappointing because those jokes are coming. You want something to spring on you. very, very unique in its cinematography. I liked how it looked. I thought the acting was pretty good too. But overall, I would have liked some more comedy to it. So
that was one that had piqued my interest. It didn't go very wide.
No, it did not get a wide release. So no, correct.
I think it came and left before I had a chance to watch it. Yeah. And I don't know if it's out and available to stream
at this time.
But after your review, maybe I'll just...
I would say give it a watch. I mean, I would. Okay. I didn't think it was bad. I just wanted some more comedy. There were so many great, you know, ha-ha moments in the trailer. And you're like, oh, okay. And then that's all you got. So it would have been nice to have a little more in there. So next one for you.
Us.
Oh, the Jordan Peele movie of the doppelgangers. All right.
Yes. So there's a family and he takes his two kids and they're going to go out to this beachside resort that his wife, I believe, had gone to when she was younger.
Okay.
And they run into one evening, they see somebody standing in their driveway. And as you indicated, it's a doppelganger of their family.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from there. There's a lot of subtext to Peele's, at least his first two films, Get Out and now Us.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with, it's actually set in 1984, and we see one of the characters experience a carnival and something that goes a little awry at the carnival. And then, again, they're returning to the same point. And it's against the backdrop is they have the, I don't know if you remember Hands Across America.
Yes, I do remember Hands Across America.
Okay,
yes,
so
yes, I do.
One of the characters turns on the TV and they're watching that. And then that kind of ties into some of the themes that Peele is going to go over in Us.
Okay.
And it's pretty scary. It's a little deeper than your average horror film. And mm-hmm. It's really exciting.
It's one really that I feel bad I missed. I wanted to see it. And I just kind of, you know, missed it. And looking forward to maybe streaming it somewhere sometime and checking it out. Because I really liked Get Out.
Yeah, then so. I'd be hard-pressed if you liked Get Out that you wouldn't like Us.
Okay, too. There you go. I'm going to go with a quirky, offbeat, again, dark comedy that I just... was fascinated. I couldn't wait for it to come out. Jojo Rabbit. The, of course, film starring Sam Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, Scarlett Johansson, and I can never say his name, Tahini Wa.
I'm not even going to try. You're not going to
You know who I mean, right? About a young man growing up in World War II, and his imaginary friend is Adolf Hitler. And Scarlett Johansson is hiding a Jewish girl up in the attic of their home. It's really well done. It's got a little bit of everything when it comes to the comedy of it. You have the very foppish Adolf Hitler, played by Tahini, whatever his name is. I mean, he's very foppy. She's over the top ridiculous, which is enjoyable. And you can laugh at it and not feel like, oh, this is inappropriate to laugh about. You had Sam Rockwell, who plays this Nazi soldier who is disgruntled and like the crotchety old man because he was the leader of a platoon and he screwed up and now he's in charge of all the Hitler youth and how just like angry and just how he mistreats the kids and drunk too. Hilarious. His performance, I think, was the highlight of the movie. Overall, I thought it was really good. I feel that there should have been, and when you see the movie, you'll see what a big connection Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the mother is. I felt that there could have been some more sussed out on that because there's a few incidents that happened that left me scratching my head going, well, why exactly did that happen? So, but overall, I enjoyed it. Did you happen to catch this one or no?
I did not. Somehow it slipped through the cracks. And it's up for Best Picture now. So
yes.
I will watch it before the Oscars air.
Yeah.
But that's one that I had some interest in seeing, partially because I knew it was kind of one of these awards bait films. I also knew there's a little bit of controversy about it because of kind of the lighthearted nature they were taking with mm-hmm. Hitler as apparently an imaginary figure in this child's, and you know how they were treating that. And I was curious to see how that played out.
And the weird part about it, it got a release like I want to say in mid-September or something, and it lasted really, really short. And then it got a re-release, which I never looked up to see what the story was there. It got a re-release like mid-October-ish or late October-ish. So I was really kind of baffled by that. You look at the gateway, it's there in September, it's gone, and then it's back, you know, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
I understand the later release of it. Sure. Because, again, they want to stay fresh in the Oscar voters' minds. But typically, they would just naturally release it then in October. Right. They wouldn't have had an initial release in September and then drop it out of theaters or whittle it down and then go wider again.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a bit of a surprise.
It is. All right, what's next on your list?
Marriage Story is an independent film by Noah Baumbach, starring Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, a couple who at the beginning of the movie we find out are having a divorce. So although it's called Marriage Story, it centers around the divorce and they have a child. Driver's character, they're both, he's a director and she's an actress that stars in his, I think they're off-Broadway productions in New York City. And she had previously starred in a movie when she was a teenager.
Okay.
And that's where she kind of got her fame, but she fell for Driver's character, ended up being a stage actress and more or less kind of being his muse in his stage plays. And things didn't work out. She moves to California, takes the kid, and they're trying to have an amiable divorce. They're trying as hard as they can, but one thing leads to another. The lawyers get involved, and it's really, really pretty poignant and also extremely funny.
And it's available on Netflix, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was a Netflix release. It did open in theaters, too, but it opened in on Netflix the same time it opened in theaters.
It reminds me of the film that I saw and the only film I've ever had a private showing where I paid money to go to the theater. I was the only one in the theater.
Okay.
Blue Valentine, which starred, of course, Michelle Williams and Ryan Gosling. And it reminds me a lot of that. I've had somebody tell me who has seen both films. Yeah, it's very similar, although Blue Valentine is still a little bit more depressing and devastating than A Marriage Story, which I don't know. Yes. I haven't seen
Have
you seen both of them?
Yeah, I like probably Blue Valentine a little bit better. I mean, it's hard. I don't want to distinguish the two too much apart. I probably enjoyed Blue Valentine a little bit more if you were to press me. They're both very good movies.
Right.
Blue Valentine ends on more of a depressing note.
Oh my gosh. As
where Marriage Story, it has a more optimistic view.
Good. Okay, good. Because ending for Blue Valentine is just a punch right in the gut. Like, it's rough. It's
right,
rough.
But I think Blue Valentine is trying to recreate the heartbreak of a relationship. Sure. And although you get that here, this is as much or more concerned with the process of divorce and how two good people who are trying to end things amiably as part of the divorce process, that's extremely hard to do, I would imagine.
Gotcha.
I hope to never find out.
Well, hey, speaking of Netflix, the next one on my list is also a Netflix movie. Dolomite Is My Name.
I liked Dolomite Is My Name.
It was fantastic. I gave it an A. I love it. I'm a fan of Dolomite. It is bad on so many levels. It's not a good movie, but it's my favorite bad movie.
So had you seen Dolomite before?
Oh, yes. Okay. I have seen Dolomite many times, actually.
Okay.
And so for me, like, to see the movie, Eddie Murphy's version of the movie, it was really well done. Really cool. From what I understand, it was pretty accurate to what went on. The only thing from what I've read is Wesley Snipes' character was not as out of control as he appeared in the movie. But I think, you know, it's Wesley Snipes. I'm sure he got carte blanche to just do whatever he wanted to do. You know what I mean?
It's a comedy.
It is.
So they probably heightened certain things for comedic effect.
Right.
But to me, this is kind of a return to what I grew up on loving about Eddie Murphy. You know, that you could sense in every moment of Dolomite Is My Name, Eddie Murphy is having a blast, that he's pouring all his energy into this role and just having as much fun with it as humanly possible.
Yes, I agree. I think I don't want to say he's back because I don't know if he ever really went away. But
His career kind of, off-screen issues.
Right.
That kind of led to his downfall following really the success of the Nutty Professor movies. The trajectory of his career was he had been launched again. I mean, he had like the Beverly Hills Cop movies of the
90s. Yeah, sure. And then the Nutty Professors.
Trading Places and then the Nutty Professors and then Oops.
Yeah.
he had the problems with the prostitute.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, and that kind of dismantled his career for quite some time. And he tried to have a couple of bounce back. Bowfinger, which I really enjoyed with Steve Martin. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe that would be.
But that didn't work out too well.
No, it was a very good movie, but for some reason it didn't put him back on the map. And I hopefully Dolomite Is My Name empowers him to do, you know, we get more Eddie Murphy movies. If he's going to make them like Dolomite Is My Name, I'm all on board.
There you go. So what's next on your list there?
Joker.
Okay, that's next on my list too. So, you know, let's be honest, it was controversial at a time when it came out due to some of the violence and whatnot in it. But overall, what'd you think of Joker?
I thought it was very good. It's hard to say that I liked a movie like Joker, but I really appreciated it, and I thought it succeeded at exactly what it was trying to do. I think what's surprising is anyone that's going in expecting to see even something in the same vein as The Dark Knight's Joker with Heath Ledger, this one really plays like a independent movie about the mentally ill or the mentally unstable. And it just happens to be that they plop him in the Joker character.
And see, that's what I was thinking as I'm watching it. I'm like, this is very much in the same vein as Taxi Driver and Falling Down. I mean, it's just with a guy who is the Joker. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I gave it a C just because I felt like, yeah, okay, I know how the story is going to kind of unfold here. I thought he did a fantastic job. Joaquin Phoenix did a great job. I mean, a fantastic job on it. I just, like, for me, it was hard to get into the movie because, as I said, I kind of sat there going, I've kind of seen this before, you know, multiple times. But overall, and the other thing is I guess because of the timing of when it was released, but I didn't find that the violence was that over the top.
No, I think the fear was, and I don't know, maybe this is just the media conjuring up something that...
Sure.
Isn't really there, is that somehow this film was going to incite violence, incite mayhem, because of course that's the buildup in the movie with the Joker. But when you see where the Joker is coming from before, mm-hmm. I mean, they actually don't even call him the Joker until the last 10 minutes of the movie, 15 minutes of the movie. But where the character starts from, it's hard to imagine this type of film. And of course, I don't think that it really did. There might have been an isolated incident or two, but
I don't think there was anything, to be honest, Paul. Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing anything about any type of issue with the film.
Right. And because, you know, it's supposed to give an understanding portrayal of someone that is mentally ill and mm-hmm. how things can kind of go awry.
Right. He slipped through the cracks. You know, that I think that happens within the first, 20 minutes of the movie. You get this idea that he's slipping through the cracks.
Right.
And, you know, whatnot. So... Well, real quickly, since we're talking about the Joker, and we're going to be talking about, of course, some other superhero movies coming up in the year, I think, Paul, I need to take just a few moments here to thank our great sponsor of this episode, and of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. As you may or may not know, they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they got everything you need for your comic book fandom. They have single issues, they got graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, various collectibles, posters, back issues, you name it, they got it. So stop on over to the store and say hi to the fine folks over at World's Greatest Comics. Or, you know, if you're feeling a little lazy, you can contact them online. They have a website, wgcomics.com. And guess what? Like everyone else, they're on Facebook. All you got to do is search for WG Comics.
I'm always in the market for some lost Funko Pops, so I might have to dial them up and see what they have there.
They got plenty of them, Paul. You definitely can dial them up and see what holes you can fill in your collection.
All right.
All right. Go ahead. What's another film, Paul, that we can discuss?
I kind of buried the lead because I didn't want to start with the best movie that I saw
in
2019.
Yeah. Okay.
So I started with probably number two, maybe number three on my list in Uncut Gems. But a film, it's now been nominated for Best Picture, thankfully. It's foreign language, which sometimes that can hurt one's chances in getting nominations. But Parasite, it's a...
I've heard very good things about that.
Yeah, it's a Korean film by Bong Joon-ho, mm-hmm. Who has done some really off-the-wall stuff. And this is probably the most accessible of all the films that he's done. And it centers around an impoverished family in Korea it's a mother and a father, a son and a daughter. And the son is just around college age, and one of his buddies is in college, and his buddy's tutoring a wealthy family's daughter, and he's going away on a trip, so he pegs his friend to help tutor the student while he's gone. And eventually, all of the family members whittle their way into this family's life as a paid worker, whether it's as a tutor or a maid or a chauffeur. This, you know, kind of, again, repressed family works its way into the wealthy family's house by performing services for them.
And
I don't want to spoil too much, but one night the wealthy family goes out of town on vacation, and the other family decides to hang out at their house for the evening, and there's a surprise that awaits them. And
Chaos ensues.
The wealthy family has their trip cut short, and it's a very, very compelling film.
Cool. Yeah, I heard very good things about it, and I don't know if it came and went, because I don't remember seeing it stick around very long.
I'd imagine it'll be back.
Okay, well, good. Then I don't feel guilty for missing it then. All right.
Yeah, I think now that it's gotten those Oscar nominations, I think some of the theaters around town, probably the Gateway Film Center will do it, and then I think sometimes Marcus and maybe even an AMC will replay some of the Best Picture nominees.
Okay, cool. I'll keep my eyes out for it. The next one on my list is disappointing, because I kind of looked forward to it. I enjoyed the original. Zombieland 2, or Zombieland Double Tap, as it's called. I don't know. It just fell flat. I feel like with the original, there would be a joke and you'd go, this one, every joke was like, oh, that was cute. That was clever.
And did it seem kind of played? Do you think the zombie genre is kind of played out to a certain extent? Because the original came out, I don't know, I'm not sure.
2009. It was 10 years ago.
Okay, so I'm not sure. Well, had The Walking Dead even come out at that point?
If I remember correctly, I believe The Walking Dead had been out for a couple of seasons, maybe. Okay. So we're still on the upswing of the zombie, fame, right, popularity. I felt like the writing wasn't as crisp. And I don't know if there was new writers on this version as opposed to the original. It just didn't seem like it was snappy enough in regards to the jokes. It really kind of fell flat. I gave it a B still because it was enjoyable for what it was. You know, it's a zombie flick. There's plenty of shooting and blowing things up and whatnot. But yeah, there's something didn't connect with me on this one.
See, that was one I was hoping to get to. And I think in general, the reviews were fairly good.
Yeah.
And I mean, partially because I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah.
Quite really, a bit. I thought it was really entertaining and funny. And
I own it. I own a copy of it. So that shows that I like it. But yeah, Double Tap, it falls short. I don't know why. Next one for you.
The Lighthouse. It's an independent movie with Robert Pattinson and William Dafoe as two men that are going to look over a lighthouse over, I think it's a four-week span. And Dafoe's kind of the seasoned veteran. This is Pattinson's first trip watching a lookout on the lighthouse. Dafoe kind of takes a senior role in basically letting Pattinson know, I'm the boss. You're going to do exactly what I do. He lets him know that on the first night. So, of course, they're on this essentially secluded island with a lighthouse. Dafoe is very, over-demanding. Pattinson's kind of a rookie. It's basically, this sounds worse than it is because it's actually a pretty funny film. It's basically a grind of watching these two men go at it and wear each other down over an extended period of time. But there's kind of a, I don't know if I want to say mystical. It's kind of a gray area whether there's kind of this mystical ability of a lighthouse.
Okay.
But that plays into what's going on in the mind. You're not sure if this is all in their head or if some of the stuff is actually transpiring. But at a certain point, it doesn't matter that these guys are kind of spinning out of control, being on a secluded island with each other, driving each other mad.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's in black and white, and the aspect ratio is a little different, which is a little awkward towards the beginning of the film, but you get used to it as it goes along.
Okay. I'm going to go with a movie that it wasn't as bad as I anticipated it being, and that would be the latest installment of Rambo, Last Blood.
Yeah, that was never on my radar. So you say not as bad as I was expecting.
Yeah, because, okay.
You must not have been expecting much.
Well, no, I really wasn't.
Are you a sucker for the old 80s, 90s action films?
Well, see, yes, I am. Okay. And look, First Blood is a fantastic movie. The first one, the very, very first one with Brian Dennehy in it. And it's great. I really like that movie. Again, I own it because I think it does a great job of mixing some of the action and adventure with a real important story about, hey, this guy came back from Nam. We're treating him like crap, you know, and that whole PTSD kind of storyline that was, you know, not really noticed, right? And then the subsequent ones are terrible. So this one is not as bad because they don't waste time with an exposition. Like, it's incredibly short exposition, and then it's killing time. And let's just be honest, that's what you want out of a Rambo movie, right?
Well, you figure they did all the exposition in the first one.
Yeah,
well, the rest is just about him mowing down people. Right, the rest of the film, right?
So, yeah, I use that term exposition loosely, but here's the setup, and then here you go. I gave it a D because at least they didn't wait. It's right on the money, 90 minutes. They didn't waste time with a long exposition.
So D is better than expected, huh?
D is better. Because I was expecting an F-ball. I was like, this looks terrible. Because let's be honest, too, it's put out by Millennium Films. Millennium Films, they don't have a very large like footprint in Hollywood. They put out some really oddball stuff like Rubber, Hobo with a Shotgun. They're not known for your Oscar contenders. Let's just be honest.
I did like Hobo with a Shotgun, though.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was
pretty good. I mean, here's the only thing here's another thing that I didn't dig, and I'm going to ruin this. So spoiler, you have your obligatory montage of Rambo getting ready for war. You've seen it in all the other ones, right? You know, he's sharpening the knives. He's loading the guns. He's on this farm that he has to protect. So he's making all the Home Alone death trap things, right? And how should that montage end? Of course, it should end with a shot of his back and him tying the red bandana on, right? There's no red bandana. None. He doesn't even wear... I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. It's Rambo. He's gotta have the red headband.
He might have some limitations with his rotator cuffs by this point, John. So he might not be able to adjust it.
Touche, Paul. Touche.
I mean, how old is Rambo supposed to be by this time?
I mean,
at least the Rocky series, you know, now he's just the manager in the Creed movies.
You're right. He does a lot of heavy lifting in this movie for being, what, 70 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's why, look, I would be fine if they did that. If he kept the shirt on, okay, that's fine. I can give you that. You have, you know, a dad bod, fine. But you got to have the red headband. I mean, that's what makes Rambo Rambo, right?
I would say the killing is what makes Rambo Rambo.
Well, yeah. So there you go. Not as bad as I anticipated. So do you have one of those on your list?
I don't because we try to do. Now, Mark sees a lot more films than I do. So I try to pick films that I'm going to enjoy. Not, for instance, films that I think are going to be worse. And then I still give it a D.
Hey, no, wait, I did enjoy Rambo for what it was. I didn't go in with any preconceived notion that it was going to be spectacular.
Well, actually, I just saw, because I want to make sure I got it in before we did our podcast. Okay. It's a big movie. It won the Golden Globe for Best Drama. Okay. It's up for Best Picture at this year's Academy Awards. It's really good. They say it's one take. I'm not sure if it's actually one take, if there have been an edit or two in the filming of it. But it feels like one take is 1917.
Yes.
Which is a World War.
I want to see that so much. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, World War I movie. It kind of has a feel of some of these more experimental films where a person is you're only following essentially two soldiers, mm-hmm, for the most part. Now, mm-hmm, obviously they come in contact with German fighters. They come in contact with other British soldiers, but essentially you're along the journey with them. You're walking along with them. And it feels like it's one continuous shot from these two British soldiers who get pegged to deliver a message to the frontline troops The Germans have cut all the telephone lines, so there are no ways that they can communicate. So they peg these two young soldiers to go and deliver a message to the frontline group to stop the attack. Mm-hmm. This British unit has four sets of soldiers that are going to go in, and they think they're going to pound the German troops and essentially wipe them off, that they've been pushed back. But that's part of the Germans' plan. So you're seeing if these two soldiers can get to the front lines in time to deliver the message. And it's we don't typically see World War I films. So follow them literally in the trenches for the majority of the film, mm-hmm. it was quite an experience. And I think that's really what it is.
And Sam Mendes is the director who's done some fantastic work in the past as well.
Yeah, he directed American Beauty. Mm-hmm. He directed Road to Perdition. Mm-hmm. He's obviously had some other films to his credit that have been critically acclaimed. This one... It's good. I mean, it's quite an experience, I would say, more than it is a full fleshed out film, because we don't really get to there's little to no character development. I mean, you're plunked down mm-hmm. from scene one, which to a certain extent is almost the entire film. I mean, they go from event to event, but it kind of feels like one continuous scene.
Well, I'm going to stick in with a film that takes place somewhat in France. My next one on the list, Ford v. Ferrari.
That's another one that I need to see. It's up for Best Picture, it just squeaked through the cracks that I didn't get a chance to see.
It was really well done. First off, I had no idea how the 24-hour Le Mans worked. Like, I just knew, like, there's no way someone can drive for 24 hours straight. Like, it's just physically impossible. So to learn how that actually works was fascinating. It really was very, very well done. It was not the way that I thought it worked, just as a side note. I thought it worked kind of like the Cannonball Run, but it doesn't. And so it was interesting to see that. It was interesting to see the backstage drama, so to speak, of Ferrari, you know, and Ford, because there's a whole, you know, rivalry, how that rivalry started, you know, is through some backdoor dealings that went awry. I felt the acting was good. The final scene with Matt Damon, it's got to be one. If not, it's got to be in the top three performances of Matt Damon. I mean, it tugs at your heartstrings. Overall, I give it an A-. I feel like there could have been, again, a little bit of some trimming down of some scenes that maybe, I don't know if they were really necessary. But overall, fantastic film.
Yeah, that's one that had been billed as one, not only something that might garner some Oscar support, but that's kind of a big Hollywood production that can be up for Best Picture. Because a lot of the ones, and you know, I like a lot of the ones that are up for Best Picture. You know, I'm glad that Parasite was up. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad that Marriage Story got recognized. But those are kind of the smaller independent ones. Mm-hmm. It's rare. It's becoming rarer and rarer that a big Hollywood production that is accessible to the mainstream audience earns this type of accolade. So that's what kind of drew me to wanting to see that. And now, you know, you like it. It's up for a Best Picture nomination. I'm going to catch it before the awards ceremony.
Sure. Anything else there? I'm curious to see if you saw a certain film. I'm just curious to see if it's on your list. So go ahead. I'm not peeking, but.
Okay. No, I squeaked in another one because it's up for Best Picture again. Okay. And I wanted to see it, and I want to make sure I saw it before the podcast. And let me preface this by saying I haven't read the book. It wasn't part of my required high school reading. I haven't seen any of the movies prior to it, but Little Women. I saw the most recent one, which apparently has more of a feminist slant to it.
Okay,
it's directed by Greta Gerwig. Extremely talented cast, and they really do deliver. Cerise Ronan plays kind of a lead role as Joe. Then there's the other three sisters, Beth, Amy, and Meg. It's good. I mean, it is interesting to see, you know, you have kind of a standard costume drama scenarios that they're working through, being a woman and being from, you know, a lower to lower middle class, that they're striving to make it and they have to find the right suitor. But in the same respect, they want to carry on out their own dreams, not just in spite of looking for, you know, financial stability.
Okay, I thought you were going to talk about The Irishman. That's where I was going.
Oh, okay.
Did you see The Irishman?
I did see The Irishman, and I like The Irishman. Right. It's on my list.
All right.
and I liked it. I didn't like it quite as much, I think, as everybody else did, but it still works. And it's interesting to see how Scorsese operates this gangster picture as opposed to some of his other ones.
Right, right. I have not watched it yet. It's on the list, but it's kind of on, you know, like further on down the list. There was many other things I wanted to see. So, and I know you're going to go, wait, you watched Rambo over top of the Irishman?
That is, you literally just took the words right out of my mouth. You took them right out of my head. I wasn't going to stick you to it. So I'm glad you brought it up, John.
90 minutes versus 3 hours, Paul. That's all I can.
That makes more sense. You can squeeze that into your schedule a little bit easier.
Exactly.
It's on Netflix, though. So you could.
Sure. I could watch and pause and then come back to it, I suppose.
But. Although this is one that I wanted to make sure I saw on the big screen. So I went and I saw the sneak preview screening of this one. And it's in some ways standard territory for Martin Scorsese.
Sure.
But what he's doing with this gangster film is completely different, I would say, than what we've seen him do in Goodfellas or in Casino or in Mean Streets, where he's really demythologizing these legendary gangsters.
Okay. Showing them more for what they truly are.
Yeah. I mean, you start off with Robert De Niro as the central figure in this film, and you start off, he's in a nursing home.
At the
end of his days.
Okay.
So
and then you work backwards.
It goes back and forth. So there's actually three different time periods. There's the present where De Niro's character is at a nursing home, and then he flashes back to two other time periods when he's operating under Hoffa and some other gangsters in the Jersey area.
So my next one on my list is another one that was very disappointing. I hope that I don't mix up the names because of the documentary that was out, but the Mr. Rogers biopic with Tom Hanks, which is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, correct?
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good, but I would say I'm with you in the disappointing category. I mean, you see that it's going to be about Fred Rogers and that Tom Hanks is portraying Fred Rogers.
Yeah.
And, you know, just that it's about a journalist that's kind of jaded and then, you know, his experiences and how it hopefully changes his outlook on life. And it's all right.
My problem was that I expect excellence out of Tom Hanks. And I felt like he was doing a parody of Fred Rogers throughout the entire film.
I don't know if I would go parody, but.
But it wasn't. The cadence and the sing-songiness just was. I don't know.
I think it's hard. I think especially for individuals like you and myself that I don't know if you watched, I assume you grew up on Fred Rogers, that Fred Rogers is so distinct in our minds that I don't know that anyone could have literally slipped into the sneakers of Fred Rogers and delivered the Fred Rogers that I think were owed.
Okay.
I think Hanks does as good a job as you probably can, but it does to a certain extent to me feel like an impersonation. I think it's a terrific impersonation, but
I
we grew up with him, so I think we're holding Hanks maybe to the highest standard possible.
I gave it a B.
Yeah, I'm kind of B minus. You know? I mean, I would still say it's worth watching.
Yeah.
But if you're pitching me that as a film in production, I'm like, oh, wow, that's, you know, that could be a tearjerker. That's going to be a great film. It's going to lift me up. And I'd just as soon everyone go see the documentary.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Which is 10 times better than this one.
I agree. You know, speaking of documentaries real quick, I'm going to throw this one out there. I believe technically it came out last year. I watched it on Netflix. The documentary Roll Red Roll. About, of course, Steubenville High School and their football team involved in the sexual assault scandal from a couple of years ago. It was very, very well done for a small independent documentary. It was very well done. It will make you angry, I think. It will also make you contemplate some issues, if you will, and think about some of those bigger topics that come out of a scandal like this. Overall, I really liked it. I gave it an A. I thought it was just a really well done documentary. So
I will keep that on the list.
And there you go. What, anything else on your list? We're getting close to, I think, maybe talking about Star Wars, right?
Yeah. One that I probably should hit on. And there's a number that I still enjoyed. I saw Abominable with my daughter and her friend. It's an animated picture. It's really well done. I liked Richard Jewell a lot, the new Eastwood one that centered around the bombing during the Olympics in Atlanta.
In 96?
Yes. Yeah. The one that I should have mentioned by now, it's extremely entertaining. It's really well done, and it's got a nice theme to it, even though I don't necessarily agree with all of the political statements that it's trying to make. The exquisite nature that it intertwines their ideology within the film is extremely clever and well done. Mm-hmm. And even if I don't agree with you, if you do it that well, it's worth seeing. Even just from a pure entertainment standpoint, Knives Out.
Knives Out was the last one that I was going to mention. It was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It was so good because you have an ensemble cast, but yet no one outshines anyone else, I don't think.
No, and I think if one does, then it starts to lose some of its effectiveness because right. This is a whodunit.
Right.
So if one starts, if you start leaning towards one character more than the other, and eventually the film's going to, but for the majority of the time, it's a guessing game as to, who killed the patriarch of the family to get the loot.
Exactly. My only gripe was Daniel Craig. Make him different because...
Why?
Well, because...
What's wrong with Daniel Craig in the film?
I felt like, okay, he wears the nice suit.
Yeah.
They called him Benoit Blanc, which sounds like a Bond villain. And if you want me not to think of him as Bond, maybe he could be a little more business casual as this great detective. And maybe he, you know what I mean? And if you do that or you give him a different name, come on, let's be honest. Benoit Blanc sounds like either A, he's a goaltender in the NHL or he's a Bond villain. I mean, come on. And if you're trying to remove me from it.
He's French, so.
Maybe if you could have been Cajun, that would have even worked, But I mean, that's nitpicking. It's a fantastic movie. There wasn't too many. I was afraid there was going to be too many twists and turns. There isn't. I think it was perfect in the way of all the different, curveballs they throw you. Christopher Plummer was great in it. Don Johnson was great in it. I mean, Daniel Craig was great in it too. I mean, heck, the whole cast was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, it's the Toni Collette's and a Jamie Lee Curtis,
Chris Evans.
Yes. Michael Shannon.
Yes.
This is, top to bottom, this cast is extremely talented and they deliver in every scene they're in. This is also a very, very funny film.
Yes.
I mean, I think what helps move the film along is that in the midst of the thrills, the jokes play into the thrilling nature of it. And it's rare. A lot of times, you'll have humor involved in kind of these whodunits or thrillers or mysteries or whatever, but it's not actually incorporated into the most quintessential and climactic moments of the movie. And it is here.
It is. It's very well done. It was on my top five list of movies from 2019. I really dug it.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah. So anything else before we dive into Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker?
I have so many, but we'll have to save those for another podcast.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, let's talk about it. What'd you think of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker?
I enjoyed it.
I did too. There's problems with it, but I think there's been problems with the other two as well.
I think it's hard, and people have been leveling. This has actually been, I think, next to Episode One, The Phantom Menace, I believe this has been the worst reviewed Star Wars of the nine episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At least if you were to go by the tomato meter rating.
Okay.
This latest Star Wars, Return of the Jedi. Not Return of the Jedi. I can't. I'm sorry. The Rise of Skywalker.
The Rise of Skywalker.
Shame on me. I'm losing all my...
You were thinking of The Last Jedi. That's what you were thinking of.
I'm mixing them all together, babe. I'm losing all my Star Wars credibility now as I recommend the film, which right now is at 53% on the tomato meter.
Wow. Okay.
So you got to get to 60% to be considered a fresh tomato.
Right.
But I enjoyed it. I think J.J. Abrams has been tasked with not necessarily trying to wrap up everything, but to bring it to some fitting close of some sorts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's certainly a possibility. Well, they're going to. There will be an episode 10, 11, 12, and God knows how many. There's too much money to be made in this franchise. Yeah. Now that Disney owns it, it's going to be done. But he's still been tasked with kind of closing this thing out. And there's a lot to close out. So,
yeah.
I was fine with how this all played out. Some people felt that it was I don't want to say a slap in the face of The Last Jedi, but for everyone that had some qualms with The Last Jedi, this was kind of the 180 of the Star Wars pictures, considering the ending of The Last Jedi.
I feel The Last Jedi and this movie are equal. I really do. I felt like Rise of Skywalker. And again, I kind of need another viewing of it. I've only seen it once. I need another viewing of it to kind of sort out some things. It was okay. I felt the story was, it was okay. There were some things that I felt could have been explained more and could have been sussed out some more. But yeah, overall, I mean, it was what it is. The problem, and this is going to be my theory that I'm going to throw out there, because I did this, and maybe that was part of the thing that kind of maybe soured me on the movie. Prior to going to see this movie on a Sunday night, on Sunday afternoon, I watched The Mandalorian episodes 6 and 7 to get caught up. The Mandalorian is 10 times better than any of the newer Star Wars films that have come out.
So you're saying 7, 8, and 9. The Mandalorian is better than episodes 7, 8, and 9.
Yes, it is. It is that darn good. Have you not seen?
I have not.
Okay. It is fantastically done. And I feel like I saw those two episodes. Then a few hours later, I go to the cinema and I go and see this. And I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
So what does The Mandalorian have, specifically the episodes that you watched, that was missing from The Rise of Skywalker?
Great character development. It's succinct. There doesn't seem to be wasted time on side plots or anything. It gets right to the point. Favreau keeps that script incredibly tight and directs it in a way that I feel like it moves. For the 40 minutes, I think a couple of episodes or 50 minutes or whatnot, it moves right along. There's no wasted time. I feel like also Favreau, and I can't, Fellini, I believe, is his partner. Dave Fellini, I believe, is how it's pronounced. I think they've also had the carte blanche to create their own characters and do something with, which these, you know, like Rey and Finn, they're fine. But The Mandalorian, I feel, is like a more complete character. He's more three-dimensional than some of the other characters. I know that's going to get
I'm going to guess that the reason why you feel that the characters are more developed is because they have more time to develop the characters.
Sure. Yeah.
Mandalorian's what, about an hour long or so?
Yeah, like I said, about 40 minutes to 50 minutes.
And right a full season is right now 7 episodes?
Eight episodes.
Yeah. 8. Okay. So that's essentially 8 hours. And there's going to be a season 2.
They've already greenlit that. Yeah.
Right. So in episode 7, The Force Awakens, he's introducing new characters. He's dealing with old characters, Abrams is. He's tying them together. He's pushing the story forward. He's essentially inherited a story where
Favreau creates
his own. So he's to a certain extent in full control. And not that Abrams or
Rian Johnson
didn't have control, but they were still kind of pigeonholed to a certain extent with the cards that they had been dealt.
Right. Like in this one, and here we go, spoiler, like I actually was somewhat, they killed Chewbacca? Oh crap, man. I want to see where this goes. Oh wait, you didn't kill him. Never mind. Like I wanted something different like that. You know what I mean? Like
You wanted a shock.
Yeah, and then see where it goes. And, you know, and we didn't get that.
I would say there's one maybe even bigger surprise or shock in the film.
What's that?
The dark side, light side kiss.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sure. Sure.
You weren't surprised at all by that?
No, I kind of anticipated that might happen.
Okay.
I wasn't really. Yeah, that I wasn't too shocked by.
Okay. Did it bother you?
No, I'm okay, not.
Because I know some
people are some furious people, about that.
Right.
I don't know. I don't care. All right. Whatever.
To me, it seemed like a natural progression based on the connection that the two had over the course of the last two films.
Correct. I mean, I think it's safe to say when it comes to...
And you didn't want Chewie gone. You just wanted a surprise that big. Let's get you on the record here. You didn't want Chewie gone. You didn't want him wiped out.
No, I would. I'm all for, because I feel like it would make things more interesting, would it not? Like now you have to deal with the fact that he is lost for good and he's not coming back. And you could play with that a little bit. I feel like killing off a character, if it's done the right way, is not a bad thing.
No, no. If it's done right, I just don't know that Chewbacca, of all the characters, had really much going on. He was enjoyable. I love Chewbacca.
Okay.
You know.
So you if you're going to kill somebody off,
there's no storyline in the Star Wars series devoted to Chewbacca. He's the wingman. I even have a t-shirt that says original wingman. It's got Chewie on it. But I mean, that's what he's there for. He's there for comic relief and okay. he's a sidekick. But yeah. I mean, there's no story behind Chewbacca. We don't even know where Chewbacca. Well, we find out in Solo, essentially, I think.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Yeah, which is yeah. was kind of a.
Yeah. Okay. I will go on record saying that the best of all of the new movies, and that includes the two side projects, Rogue One is the best. I think hands down.
I like The Force Awakens.
Okay.
I really did. Right. Rogue One, I wasn't invested in.
Right. I remember our conversation about it.
I think the characters were too dry.
Okay. All right. I just recently watched it again.
No, I would say a lot of people are in your camp.
Yes, I think so. I think so. Yeah.
But I think those individuals might be more invested in Star Wars and the universe of Star Wars and how things operate within that universe.
Okay.
To me, in the end, the Star Wars movies appeal to me because there's an overarching universal theme to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I find the characters to be colorful, and it's... And this is going to probably tick off some people that are big Star Wars fans. But I mean, it's basically kind of a boy's fairy tale. I mean, it's
okay.
It's that you have a princess.
Okay.
You have, for lack of a better term, you know, the big bad guy.
Okay.
You have the ultimate in the Jedi, which is kind of the king. And,
okay.
you know, I mean, to me, it kind of plays out like a male fairy tale.
Okay.
I like it for those reasons,
sure.
to be honest.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him.
All right, so any movies coming up in the next 6 months here that you're interested in seeing that are coming out here? I mean, we got Doolittle, Bad Boys for Life, the Harley Quinn movie with the Birds of Prey, Sonic the Hedgehog, A Quiet Place Part 2. And again,
that's the one I'm probably of the ones you mentioned. That's the one I'm looking forward to the most. If you want to talk about an experience, that the first, The Quiet Place, if you're in a theater, that is really quite an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're with a respectful group that can be quiet during the Quiet Place.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I'm looking at this list going from January to June, and again, I'm just picking the big ones, you know, that's going to get a lot of hype. You know, I think that for me, the one that is I'm most interested in seeing are going back to the superhero movies. I'm interested in Black Widow, Wonder Woman 1984, and I would like to see what Harrison Ford does with Call of the Wild. It's a book that I do like.
Okay.
I'm curious to see how that pans out. You know, I also, just because I'm going to be a snarky jerk about it, I also cannot wait for the New Mutants to bomb, if it even comes out. I still believe it will not be released in April, because it's only been pushed back 4 times now. So, and it looks like hot garbage anyway. So, a way to go with the X franchise. The X-Men franchise.
Yeah, that's really probably, I mean, that's really sliding off. I mean, it's not quite gone off the cliff yet, but it's headed downhill, the X-Men franchise.
Well, and I swore that this movie was made like 2 years ago, and I think they've reshot a bunch of stuff. Originally, it was pitched kind of as a horror movie. I'm like, a horror movie with the X-Men, because essentially New Mutants is the teenagers of X-Men. I was convinced it was just going to go straight to Disney Plus and never see the light of day. I still believe that's going to happen. I don't believe this comes out in April. I believe it's another, you know, we'll push it back and then eventually it's on your TV. So
I am on board with you with Wonder Woman 1984. Have you seen the trailer for that?
I've seen part of it. Yes. Yeah. I didn't watch all the way through it, but
I think they showed that one just before The Rise of Skywalker. And wow, I think that's going to be a blast.
Yes. And I think it will match up to the original. In terms of quality and entertainment value and everything.
Yeah, I would say of the DC universe, not including Christopher Nolan's Batman movies, the original Wonder Woman is to me by far the best of the lot.
Wonder Woman is number one for me. Shazam is number two. And I put Aquaman at 3. I thought Aquaman was okay. So
I did like Shazam quite a bit.
Yeah, right. Shazam was good. Was fantastic. All right, Paul, do you want to tell folks where they can find Film Bound Pod?
Yes, Filmbound is found at filmboundpod.com. New episodes of the podcast typically appear one every Wednesday.
So do you have a special Oscars edition coming out or anything?
We have a best of the year. So we'll have our best of 2019 coming out. I think that one will probably hit online probably somewhere just before or just after the Oscars. Hopefully just before.
There you go. Anything else you want to say?
No, just thanks again for having me. And, you know, there's
stop so watching many... Rambo movies.
Yeah. Well, you might not have a choice there, yeah, right?
They're done.
Unless he's going to start mowing people down in the retirement community.
Oh, with that a crossover, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
There you go.
Rambo. There you go. That's what we need. Well, Paul, it's been fun as it always has been. And we'll do this again sometime in the summer and recap the movies from January to June or July of 2020. Cool.
Sounds great. Thanks again.
All right. With that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Mr. Paul Markoff talking about movies, and hopefully we did not spoil anything for you in our rundown of the movies we've seen over this past 6 months or so. But, you know, if you have a comment, whether you agree with us or disagree with us, or you're mad at me because I spoiled, you know, Knives Out for you or whatever, let me tell you how you get in touch with me. First of all, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter account is @PVDMVP. You can even leave me a message over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast. That, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. Now, maybe you want to tell somebody about this great episode because you know a movie buff. You know somebody that would appreciate Paul and I dissecting some of these films as we have done here on the episode. Well, you'll want to tell them that they can get this podcast at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or a bevy of other places such as iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Deezer, iHeartRadio app, radio.com app, Pod Paradise, the Echo Network, SoundCloud, heck, basically anywhere you find podcasts, just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to throw my name after it, PVDcast, John Orlando, and Walla Walla, Washington, you're sure to find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps the algorithm and helps me out in the quote-unquote rating, so to speak. And of course, subscribing means you will never miss a great episode of the PVDcast. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. Thank you for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.